passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
On Saturday, November 19th, Post Wrestling turns 5 years old.
I would raise a glass, but, you know, unfortunately I can't drink. I got gout, so I'll leave it to you guys to have the fucking toast. So thank you for all the entertainment and all the content you guys put out. You guys are amazing. And again, thank you for letting me partake in the conversation. You know what I mean? You guys have been really fucking nice to me. And happy 5 year anniversary, and here's to 5 more. Peace out.
Leave your memories at memo.fm/postwrestling and join us Saturday, November 19th at QXT's nightclub in Newark, New Jersey for our 5 year anniversary show presented by our friends at Real Digital. A live Q&A, the Post origin story, VIP meet and greet and event t-shirt with the largest gathering of the Post community ever. Tickets available now at postwrestling.com/live.
When Ryan's, when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the 18. That makes sense that these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, downloaded Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Way. Take the mic.
Hello and welcome to Rewind a Raw, John Pollock and Waiting. It is another week here at Post Wrestling, and we have kicked it off with a breezy, quick, fast-paced edition of Raw that I felt like I just sat down to watch Raw, and boom, it was over, just like that. I couldn't believe how fast this show went, Way.
Is that so?
I love these eight-hour Raws. I think that this was the key to everything. Not less is more. More is more.
I mean, after 10 years of this, maybe you're getting used to it a little bit more.
I can't prove this, but I feel as though they had all their television booked from Extreme Rules through Crown Jewel, and they had all of it set up, and then they were like, no, there's an extra week in October. Oh, Christ. We got to put a Raw in? We'll put some matches in. I don't know. Nikki Cross.
Yeah, this week felt...
Dude, this was a dull episode of Raw.
I've been really high on, like, you know, this sort of new era of WWE programming for a while. Last week, I felt, was a really weak show, and maybe you kind of give them some leeway because, you know, Triple H was gone from COVID. I don't necessarily think they have that excuse 2 weeks in a row. Like, this was as bad, if not worse, than last week, I felt.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even though, like, you look at, like, what were the massive changes. It's not as though they were missing a ton of people, but it had the feel of a show that, like, didn't have all its big stars. But they were largely all there. Like, you've moved Ray, but that was your own move that you opted to make. And I don't think that's, you know, crumbling Raw. But it just felt like such an uninspiring show tonight. And a lot of the finishes that we'll get into, it was just
that was the main thing, not even so much the star
just
power.
Constant interference or distraction finishes up and down the card. And then when they came, God bless the women at the end, like, on its own, the match was fine. But, dude, 23 minutes at the end of this show, and then that kind of a finish, I was just, I was very happy when the show was done by the end, because it just felt like the longest 3 hours I can recall in a long time for the show, where you truly felt the drag of the show. And I felt that drag by hour one, much less three.
Well, again, I watch it on delay, so I skip through the commercials. I don't necessarily feel it as much, but I'm just looking at the content, and it was certainly a pretty uninspired episode, it felt.
Well, we are inspired, and we are going to be inspired on Saturday, November the 19th, after 5 years of inspiration, where we are coming live at you in Newark, New Jersey, QXT's Nightclub, presented by our friends at Real Digital. Wei and I are going to be up there on stage. We're going to be reading our emails from 2017. You thought Hillary Clinton's emails were explosive. Wait till you hear the John and Wei Ting dialogue from December of 2017 as we put this whole thing together. We will be reading those exclusively for all of you in attendance. A live Q&A, VIP meet and greet, event t-shirt as well. Braden and Davey in the house. WH, Neil Flanagan, Chris from LA, many more to come. John Cena is going to be in the house. It's going to be a packed one at QXT's Nightclub. And if you heard off the top, if those of you that are listening to the podcast version of Rewind to Raw, we are collecting people's memories, good and bad, of post-wrestling's history, Hanzi kicking things off, and you can submit your own memories that can be heard here on the show over the next couple of weeks. You can go to memo.fm/postwrestling to submit your memories and messages for us, and then pick up your tickets now, postwrestling.com/live. We want to see all of you out there on Saturday, November the 19th, the biggest post gathering ever.
And it's just down the street from AEW's Full Gear. We'll be doing it just hours before that event takes place. So you can walk to the Prudential Center with a bunch of different postmarks. It's the perfect way to start off your day, I suppose, yes, of AEW Full Gear programming.
And then after the show, Wei and I are either going to the Prudential Center, or everyone's coming with us to our hotel room to watch Full Gear. We're going to find out what's happening in the days and weeks to come. It'll be we will find out if we have full access at Full Gear. So I'm very much looking forward to the show. Are you excited, Wei?
Full Gear or tonight's review? What are you talking
about? No, I'm talking about our show. I don't care about any of this other stuff.
Oh,
I only
okay.
care about our live show. I'm very self-centered.
I am very excited. I'm just excited to see everybody in person, to meet a lot of the people that we've, you know, spoken to over the years, but never really engaged with in real life. So I'm looking forward to seeing everybody, and I'm looking forward to seeing the live AEW show as well.
This week, we will turn everyone's attention to Tuesday night's live edition of Ask Away. We are going to be going live for all members at the Post Wrestling Cafe, 8 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday night, for this month's edition of the Ask Away Mailbag Show. So if you're a cafe member, you are welcome to join us. Wei, look at that image.
I don't know how did you do this?
I was up all night.
So for people listening to this, John is in charge of a lot of these graphics now. And to advertise this week's schedule, he found an image of a post, a mailbox with the word post on it. Did you add the lettering yourself, or was this a clip art that you found with the word post already on it?
I copied this way. I just.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. There was no originality that went into this at all. But all for the good of the show. Tuesday night, Post Wrestling Cafe members, join us live. We will take your calls, but you can also submit your questions before Tuesday night at forum.postwrestling.com. Get all of your questions in, and we will be going through all of them. Always a fun show. Ask away.
I'm impressed by your, resourcefulness either way, John. You know,
I don't have anything for Ask Away, so I have to get clever.
It's great. No, yeah. It's perfect.
Yeah.
I was actually taking a walk through the neighborhood, noticing a bunch of posts, like mailboxes with the word post on it.
They're quite plentiful, actually. There's quite a lot of them. I own one of them. We took a picture beside one of them.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe we should be thinking about the potential marketing idea.
Well, it would be a great idea. As you can also see on the graphic, the NWA podcast will be back this Saturday night always must listen to, must watch programming with Nate Milton, Chris Ely, and Andrew Thompson. There is no ROH pay-per-view competing with them, so Chris will not be ruining any pay-per-view results for you this Saturday night. Maybe he'll have Anderson Silva and Jake Paul on in the background. Can ruin that for you if it's not ruined already. So lots to check out this week up on the site. All of our regular shows will be dropping, but I want to make mention of last Thursday and the wellness policy with Wei Ting, Mike Murray, Neil Flanagan, and Jordan Goodman. I listened to this over the weekend. I thought this show was fantastic, Wei. I thought it was just so good. The calls were incredible. You guys have built like a really, really incredible thing on this show. I was very impressed with the show.
John sent me a really nice message this afternoon telling me how much he enjoyed the show. And thank you so much, John. I was really happy to be able to, you know, have the space for that conversation. But, you know, you mentioned four names. It was a show to me that was certainly made by a lot more than four names, because we had some incredible phone calls from people, including, you know, people in the chat room right now, like Dickie Bird, who called in and, you know, spoke about their experiences either with fatherhood or impending fatherhood in Dickie Bird's case. So I encourage everybody to go check that out. The wellness policy is free. It's always free. It's hosted on the Post Wrestling Cafe feed, as well as youtube.com/postwrestling. Just type in the wellness policy in our YouTube search channel, you'll find it, or just go to postwrestling.com and under podcast, under Post Wrestling Cafe, click on the wellness policy and you'll be able to find all of them.
Well, I definitely recommend checking that out. And of course, all of the shows that came out over the weekend. We had a Halloween Havoc post show with Braden and Andrew Thompson. Myself and Eric Marcotte did a UFC 280 post show on Saturday. And of course, WrestleNomics Radio dropping with Chris, Jesse, and Brandon on Sunday. Asking the big question, could The Rock buy the WWE? Find out in this podcast. An hour and 20 minutes. You will get your answer by the end of it. So, and Brandon Thurston will also be at the post wrestling 5-year anniversary show next month. So come hang out with Brandon Thurston as well. He's going to be handing out fist bumps.
Is that what he does?
Yes. He has promised us. Ooh. All right, let's get into the news of the day. And we're going to start off with a really tragic story. I know you mentioned this last week, but we haven't discussed it. And that is the passing of Kevin Nash's son, Tristan, which happened last Wednesday. His son was 26 years of age, just a tragic, tragic loss. And amazingly, Kevin Nash did a podcast today for 90 minutes with his co-host Sean Oliver, dedicated to his son, who was involved with the production of the podcast. And I clicked on this and I just could not fathom Kevin Nash doing this, but I'm sure that it was very helpful for him to just maybe talk about his son and have a distraction, have some kind of outlet for what I cannot even imagine the emotions that he has been going through with his wife over the past week. But this was a really tough listen. He talked about him and his wife essentially finding their son in his room, and he was, you know, he had a seizure that led to him going into cardiac arrest, and the EMTs came, they were able to actually bring him back and then got him to the hospital, but ultimately could not save him. And, you know, he talked about the fact that him and Tristan had actually just recently, both of them made the pact to just stop drinking cold turkey. And that had happened just the week before. So, I mean, he is, Kevin Nash is obviously dealing with a ton right now. But man, it was a very, very hard listen to hear about. But I mean, everyone has kind of their way of grieving and of talking about it. That's probably actually very healthy to probably be doing that rather than just being, you know, keeping it internalized. And I mean, I don't know how you possibly deal with something like that.
I can't begin to try to process what that would be like. It's the worst thing imaginable. And everybody, you know, will probably have a different reaction to how they respond to that sort of grief. And it seems like for, you know, Kevin Nash, one of those was to talk about it and share it with the world. Exactly what sounds, somebody who sounded like a tremendous human being, way too young, you know, taken from the world. And I listened to part of the podcast, and it seems like as usual, you know, Kevin Nash is somebody who, you know, seems like he's relying on a bit of humor to try to deal with something like this. But I have to imagine something this new, this fresh, not even a week. I imagine a lot of that healing is still to come. So our thoughts and condolences to them.
Yeah, I mean, this has been an incredibly difficult year for Kevin Nash, and that's putting it very, very mildly. So our condolences to the Nash family. And if you want to check out that edition of the Click This podcast, it is out today, discussing 90 minutes on his son, Tristan. Over the weekend, Halloween Havoc took place. Some of the takeaways from the show, Bron Breakker retaining the NXT Championship over Ilya Dragunov and JD McDonagh, Wes Lee winning the North American Championship, and Mandy Rose overcoming not just Alba Fire, but the House of Horrors and retaining the NXT Women's Championship. Did you dip in at all to Halloween Havoc on Saturday Night Way?
I did, yeah. I'm not keeping up with the NXT's with the weekly as much anymore, but like I definitely will try to make time for, you know, what I consider to be like their best foot forward in these sort of monthly or bi-monthly specials. It was definitely very reminiscent of, I think, Halloween Havoc, maybe at its most Halloween Havoc, you know, with some wackiness in the form of, I guess, what we now, you know, deem cinematic matches. And in this case, one that I didn't think was all that great. It was spooky. It was well produced, but I didn't think it necessarily lended anything all that clever, in my opinion. But I do feel like it was a show bookended by two very excellent matches in the ladder match, and also this three-way main event, which was tremendous.
That main event was phenomenal. The three of them, I thought, just did that to me was the match worth checking out. It was a very good ladder match too. Like, I'm very kind of, I always talk about like the ladder matches, I'm pretty numb to them, but there was some pretty spectacular stuff in this match when you have a Nathan Frazier in there with Wes Lee, Oro Mensah as well. And then you kind of had Von Wagner as your base in this whole thing. So, I mean, the five of them went out there to try and steal the show. And I thought, yeah, that would have been the second best match. But if you missed the show, I would very highly recommend the main event, because they just did a terrific job. And, you know, you kind of expect that with a JD McDonagh and an Ilya Dragunov, but seeing Bron Breakker, it just seamlessly, hanging with these two, like you can see where this guy, is already just a year into this. He's a very, very special talent. And I'd also add, while hardly the polished talents that, maybe you had in the main event, I thought for their match that Damon Kemp and Julius Creed, like it was just this out of control spectacle that they were super hard. I think they're in the perfect places for their careers right now. I would not be earmarking them for the main roster anytime soon, but they went out there. It was their first big singles platform for the two of them to have. And I have to say, I was pretty enthralled with the match. Like, it wasn't match of the show, but I was very impressed with the two of them, with what they had to work with as well, with like an ambulance stipulation. Like, it is kind of outside the normal comfort zone, but like, I think both of them have a very, very high upside, but they're where they need to be in NXT.
Agreed. Yeah. You know, Julius Creed, I think we've already seen plenty of him for, so like his performance wasn't as much of a surprise, but Damon Kemp, I consider somebody very new to this. And you're talking about two people, you know, with pedigrees in the amateur wrestling world, doing a very sports entertainment heavy match, you know, with a lot of outside brawling and weapons and things like that. And I thought the both of them carried a great deal of intensity, and you know, I didn't think it was like necessarily a match I'll be talking about at the end of the year, but I thought for a performance from two relatively new people at the sports entertainment thing, I thought they both did really well.
And you know, there is a lot invested in his younger brother, in Gable Steveson, but if they feel he needs that step of his career, and I would highly encourage that they put Gable Steveson in NXT first, that's probably your program, is the Stevesons against the Creeds.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, I wonder how far along he is right now.
I mean, he's not on television yet, so, you know, I would assume at this point Damon Kemp is, you know, the veteran of the two. It's not saying a whole lot, but I mean, to me, like, once Gable is ready, I mean, he will be fast tracked. I like if they put him in NXT, I would imagine it would not be for long. I think they want him on the main roster, but you know,
he's already drafted. He's already technically supposed to be signed.
He's got a spot on Raw. That is right. Yeah. So that was a year ago. So I don't know. I just you know, you could certainly argue, you know, putting him onto national television now, like, is that the best place to be putting him when he is the face of that NIL program? I think they want to make sure that he is handled with care either way. But we'll see. It would be that would be the natural pairing, is to have them together, even though the Kemps and the Stevesons, they might not know one another, but maybe in another world they were brothers. WWE has announced back-to-back nights at the Bell Center in Montreal next February. They will do SmackDown February 17th, and then the next night, on the Saturday, Elimination Chamber will be staged from the Bell Center, which will be the first pay-per-view from WWE in Montreal since Breaking Point in 2009. So they are going back to the Bell Center. So this was the event that ended up happening in Saudi Arabia earlier this year. So going from Saudi Arabia to Montreal, which I guess is better news for Sami Zayn than this past year's.
he might actually be at this one. And you know what? We'll probably be in a pretty prominent position, I would hope, for a show like this, he and Kevin Owens. So happy for Montreal.
Those are going to be some electric crowds, especially for the pay-per-view. But it is a question of where the Saudi Arabia show goes next year. Like, I don't imagine them wedging one of those in before WrestleMania. Maybe they go there in the spring or something like that, because the deal does call for two per year.
Was it February the year before last?
You know, it's kind of been February and like late October, early November. Pretty much that's been the schedule. It was kind of that in between pay-per-view. I mean, they could always do something maybe in March that's a $50 million show. So you're not going to worry about where you put it into the calendar as long as it's there.
All right.
But there you have it. A note on a Laredo Kid. So, he had posted on his Instagram, or at least someone on his behalf posted on Instagram, that on Sunday he worked two shows for AAA and ended up requiring emergency surgery. And you could see the image, and a message was put up on his Instagram account. And then AAA posted that after their event on Sunday, Laredo Kid was attended by medical personnel after multiple abdominal disturbances. Afterwards, he was transferred to a nearby hospital for a revision and a diagnosis. At midnight on Monday, October 4th, 24th, he went through surgery with positive results. At this moment, he is stable and is under medical supervision. We will keep providing updates according to medical reports. And if you go to Lucha Blog on Twitter, they have translated a video from Mamba, who I guess was in contact with Laredo Kid after this, and stating that he underwent surgery to remove the damaged part of his small intestine and another to reconnect the remainder. He's doing okay and going to remain in the hospital for a few days to make sure the surgery went as expected. Laredo's been told he can't do anything for at least 2 months and he can only start working out after that. This shouldn't affect him long term, but he's going to have a break from wrestling for a while. So this sounds like something fairly significant when you're talking about 2 months that he could potentially be missing. So hoping for a full and relatively quick recovery for Laredo Kid. Whenever you hear of something of that nature, you're obviously concerned about the severity of it. Ratings from Friday, SmackDown did 2.2 million viewers and a 0.52 in the 18 to 49 demo. They were, you know, on par with what they did last week, but both SmackDown and Rampage got hit hard among adults 18 to 34. SmackDown was hurt by it. Rampage was decimated in that demo. And I think you can attribute a lot of that to both the NBA and the NLCS game that was going on. But SmackDown was down 24% in 18 to 34. Rampage, on the other hand, did 480,000 viewers and a 0.13 in 18 to 49. So when you look at the overall viewership number, they're up 5% from last week. But when you look under the hood at the younger audience, they were down sizably from last week, down 23% in 18 to 49. In 18 to 34, they were down 60%. percent from last week. This was a very low number by Rampage standards in 18 to 34. So it would seem that at least some of that you attribute to the baseball and NBA games that were going on that night. And they were number one and two for the night on cable. But it was, yeah, certainly younger viewers on Friday night impacted by what was going on. In Canada, SmackDown actually finished fifth among sports programs. They were behind the Raptors game with Brooklyn, two CFL games, and the NLCS. So all things considered, SmackDown held up pretty well in Canada on Friday night. It's, Friday night, you put on the Raptors game on one screen, CFL, and then boom. Get SmackDown and the NLCS on a split screen, and that's, you've got the perfect sports night of viewing ahead of yourself.
There's nothing more Canadian than that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, tonight's Raw is going to do a terrible number on OLN. Like, that's in Canada, Raw is by far the most watched wrestling program. And when they go to OLN, like, they were doing like under 70,000 viewers. So they are going to do a very, very low number. Sportsnet 360 is actually re-airing Raw tonight at 2 a.m. And I bet you that number might beat the live edition of Raw tonight from 2 till 5 a.m. because those replays, I remember overnight from Sportsnet 360, like, they were being as high, if not higher, than the live version of it. I had to look up where I had OLN, and I just ended up watching on the Sportsnet player anyway. Like, OLN is up in the 500s for me.
Wow, I don't have cable, so makes no difference to me.
You're not missing much from the Outdoor Life Network. And the final thing is just the lineups for this coming week. So NXT on Tuesday, coming out of Halloween Havoc, we have two tag title matches. Katana Chance and Caden Carter defending their titles against Zoe Stark and Nikita Lyons. Pretty Deadly defend their belts against Idris Enofe and Malik Blade, and Lash Legend taking on Shotzi. Meanwhile, on Dynamite Wednesday in Virginia, Jon Moxley is defending the AEW Championship against Penta, which was just set up over the weekend online. They did not push this on Rampage, and it just is kind of coming out of nowhere with Moxley defending the title last week and now defending it against Penta on Wednesday. Jericho and Daniel Garcia will take on Claudio Castagnoli and Wheeler Yuta. Bryan Danielson against Sammy Guevara. Riho against Jamie Hayter, and FTR taking on Swerve in Our Glory, which is a pretty solid lineup for Dynamite.
As usual. Yeah, I think Dynamites are usually like really strong on paper. I've been very negative on Rampage lately, but Dynamite has been, to me, pretty consistent, you know, over the past several weeks.
Yeah, they're also in Virginia on Wednesday, so it'll be interesting if Hangman Page is on the show, if they bring him out for an update or there's something just following up off of last Wednesday and the way the show went off the air. So there you have it. That is all of the news and notes. You can find all of it up at postwrestling.com, and we will get into tonight's edition of Raw from the Spectrum Center in Charlotte, North Carolina, which, if you were picking Mondays to go attend Raw, Charlotte, sorry, this was you got the short end of the stick on Monday night. This felt like a long show, and this was a crowd that did not seem all that engaged with what they were presented as well. Like, this was a pretty low-key crowd, which is going to infuriate my inbox when I hear from people in Charlotte who will say, "We were so loud. What were you watching?" Did not sound great on this show.
I mean, I had the same opinion as you about the crowd. Whoever would be saying that might have been surrounded by a really loud person in front of them, two really loud people next to them, and one really loud person behind them. But that does not necessarily translate to screen. So I would agree.
Yeah. One of the patterns we've seen over this, you know, last couple of months has been, you know, several things that are announced in advance for Raw that, you know, going in. And like this morning, I'm just looking at him like, all they've announced is Bayley and Bianca Belair. And then in the afternoon, they added Finn Balor and Carl Anderson. But that is all that they had plugged for tonight. It just seemed, it was a very underwhelming lineup. Like, there were no angles set up last week. There were no appearances. It just felt like a very ho-hum edition of Raw and nothing built up at all.
Yeah, I usually like go on the website just to kind of grab the photos to use for their previews. And tonight it was only two matches, which is kind of unusual, you know, in this new era of WWE programming.
Yeah, which these two matches got a combined 40 minutes of ring time. So that was how they were padding out this show. The Judgment Day starts things off. Finn Balor calling Dominic versus AJ Styles one of the greatest matches of all time. And AJ crumbled under the pressure to the legendary Dominic. And then the highlight of the show, Dominic is handed the microphone. The Judgment Day are the only ones to believe in me. I proved my doubters and my haters wrong. I'm built different. And then Dominic proclaims that he is this generation's Eddie Guerrero before he corrects himself and states Eddie was his generation's Dominic Mysterio.
Well, of course. Yeah.
How does that work? Like Eddie, like, would he have been able to have like telepathy? Like, would he know this in the future? Like in 2003, would he have known that this little child, I will be him of his generation now?
I think in retrospect, you can make those sort of comparisons, you know, like we can call Bob Backlund maybe the Hulk Hogan of his period of dominance.
Okay.
You know, that sort of thing. I mean, what he's saying is that he is the standard, you know, with which everybody in the future and the past will be compared against.
It's good. It like the Eddie stuff gets the crowd really riled up when he does mm-hmm. like the Eddie spots and compares himself to Eddie.
To me, there's a real awareness of, I think, you know, how Dominic Mysterio comes across, you know, when they exaggerate him to this degree for heat. And every line everybody said here, I thought was pretty funny, you know, and also great for, you know, making you want to boo the person, calling him the greatest luchador in the history of the business. I thought all of it worked really well.
The OC cannot hear any more of this. AJ says that Dominic is this generation's James Ellsworth, and they're going
to
pick
did
off.
Did not expect that name to ever be brought up in WWE again for many reasons.
Well, it got no reaction either. I feel like James Ellsworth is like a, I mean, I imagine like it resonates with some people, but that's a fairly random name, I would say.
I think it makes sense, you know, when you're picturing like who's a notable like wrestler who is really shouldn't have ever been in the ring. Like he was kind of hired to be that role, right?
They're going to pick off the Judgment Day one by one, and Balor brings up how he was the one that started the club. They're all living off of his legacy, and Carl Anderson says that he is the toughest man in the building, and he wants the match with Finn Balor. And then I was waiting for Finn to say, are you sure you aren't already booked in another match somewhere else? Are you able to have a match here in WWE tonight?
Well, people were joking that, you know, they should have really put the Never Open Weight Championship on the line for this one.
Well, you know? I mean, it kind of unofficially changed hands here. So maybe Finn's going over to take on Hikuleo.
Yeah, maybe. I felt like this was a real missed opportunity for Carl Anderson to like actually say something of substance to kind of build to this match, which, you know, let's like, in the history of the available matches for a Carl Anderson in WWE, this like might be at the very top, you know? So this should have been a big one for him, and they should have used whoever wrote this promo for Carl Anderson. Like they should have used this time to at least like speak a little bit about their history together. Instead, he had something to say about being the toughest man in this room, which as a babyface, none of this audience ever bought. Like who is Carl Anderson? When has he ever professed to be the toughest person, even in the ring right now? That's nobody could buy that. I you know, especially for him being a babyface now, like I was hoping to hear a lot more about the significant history between the two beyond just like, I started the club. Like, tell us about the dojo. Tell us about making Chonko and I don't know, making Jushin Liger's bed for him or something. Like, you know, like give me something of substance to let me realize that you have actually known each other for, you know, the better part of like 10 or 15 years or however.
Well, in the new WWE quote unquote universe, you know, freelance wrestling might exist. Full Impact Pro might exist. New Japan Pro Wrestling doesn't exist at all.
Wow. That's crazy.
That is what we have learned. Okay.
Yeah.
The signing of Anderson and Gallows.
It's true. You're right. I didn't realize that because they've been mentioning every promotion under the sun, you know, Michael Cole at least. And obviously AEW is not one of them. But you figure New Japan would be, especially, you know, just kind of given, I mean, this entire storyline is based off of a New Japan concept and their history in New Japan together.
Maybe they don't want people going to NJPW1972.com and looking at the lineup for November 5th, where they are still It's very bizarre. Like, they are still pushing this match for November the 5th, and it just seems like, I don't know, like, it just seems like such a weird story.
So they're conventionally, they would strip the champion if they couldn't defend it. And it seems to me like New Japan really wants Carl Anderson to eventually defend it. So I'm figuring they come up with some sort of way to, you know, still allow like Anderson to come over, whether it be at the Tokyo Dome or something else, to actually defend the championship. And maybe for that reason, they're waiting to actually do an angle, perhaps at the actual event.
Well, I think New Japan, they better not be holding their breath. I think that they're just, it's very bizarre that New Japan, who are very much sticklers for this stuff, would advertise a match that today mm-hmm. looks like there's no prayer of it happening, that they would advertise that. But they are. And you've got like Takami Obari like going into like Tokyo Sports, like talking about how angry he is. And I can see wrestlers using the media for work stuff. I do not see Obari going and, you know, for quotes that are not his legitimate feelings. And I think New Japan's going to be the ones here with like the egg on their face at the end of this whole thing. That's certainly how it feels.
We'll see how it plays out.
So we get into Carl Anderson and Finn Balor. Who is the toughest man in the room? The big question. Carl Anderson kicks out Balor's knee, hits a dragon screw, and then a running Liger bomb onto Balor for a two count. Sling blade from Balor in response, hits the shotgun dropkick, climbs up, but then Anderson stops him and hits a superplex. Dominic gets onto the apron and is stopped by AJ. Priest goes after AJ, throwing him over the desk, and then Priest is attacked by Gallows, setting up the big spot where Rhea Ripley scoop slams the fake cane, Luke Gallows, right onto the floor. And Dominic gets into the ring. The distraction leads to Carl Anderson hoisting up Finn Balor, and Ripley low blows Carl Anderson behind the referee's back, and Balor becomes your never open weight champion in 17 minutes and 12 seconds.
Huge celebration, confetti everywhere, you know, Finn Balor's going back. Good match, I felt, you know, especially I'm not that impressed by Carl Anderson usually, but, you know, he has great chemistry, obviously, with Finn. And I thought they
were having a very nice match up until the finish. Like, you have to overcome the constant commercial breaks in the middle of these. But I thought they had like a pretty nice match together.
And I think for somebody still relatively like uninitiated as a babyface, they managed to get a pretty good like near fall reaction for Carl Anderson doing the jumping neck breaker, which I guess, you know, he can't do the gun stun anymore. So this jumping neck breaker off of the middle rope, which looked really good and got a very good near fall. So but this did begin the night of distraction finishes up and down the card, basically.
Yeah, this would just be a whole slew of them that we were going to be served on Monday.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Johnny Gargano and The Miz are backstage, and Miz wants to know what Gargano knows. Miz is denying that there is any secret, and Gargano turns it around, stating, then why are you asking me what I know? So Miz calls him an internet troll, and Miz is going out to the ring. So he comes out, he calls out Dale Earnhardt Jr., who is in the crowd, and states, I could beat you in a race with my Tesla. Miz then admits he does have a secret and goes over how Dexter Lumis abducted him. Ciampa has now disappeared. He hasn't seen Ciampa in weeks. And Miz has been targeted because of my mind. And Lumis is jealous that I chose Ciampa to impart all my wisdom onto instead of him. And he was at home without a job. Ciampa is my best friend. And Gargano walks out stating he's full of crap. I just texted with Ciampa. He's not missing. He's injured. Just tell the real truth or else I'm going to blow the whistle. And, you know, Johnny Gargano is not Chris Jericho when it comes to just getting random objects over, because this whistle, this idea blows.
Very good, John. I was kind of curious to know how you felt about this, because I wasn't necessarily sure, and I'm certainly not really sure how the audience is taken to this version of Johnny Gargano. I think Gargano, like, you know, throughout his NXT run as a babyface, has always kind of had that sort of little like smart ass type of thing. They're really playing it up on Raw, you know, by having him counter The Miz, by outsmarting The Miz, and I don't know, trying to be funny at the same time with things like this whistleblower thing. And for some reason, it's making me dislike him more than he would. I would have if he didn't do any of it. Like, if he was just simply being himself. Something about like this Johnny Gargano, I find kind of obnoxious. And like, you know, he's just kind of, I feel bad for The Miz, actually. You know, that this guy is just kind of picking on him. Of course, you know, he's saying, he's justifying it because the secret that The Miz apparently is holding, it must be so bad. So maybe we await to see what the secret is, whether or not this is justified.
He said that the secret might get The Miz canceled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what could it be?
I don't know. Did he like do an interview like early in his career and said something incredibly offensive?
I mean, why would Dexter Lumis care about that? We'll see. It sounds like you're very curious about the secret, John.
Edge of my seat. Yeah. I mean, does this image not sell you on 3 hours of follow-up next week?
Well, here's the other thing. It's like, I mean, Johnny Gargano, I felt like was on a very good progression. You know, is Kevin Owens injured or something? Like, where is he?
I mean, he was on NXT last week.
Right, but not wrestling.
Did not wrestle, no.
So I don't know what's going on. I loved what they were doing with Owens and Gargano together as a wrestling team. And all of a sudden now Gargano's just kind of like put into this, you know, as a surrogate for Dexter Lumis and this Miz storyline. And again, maybe for a good section of the audience, this is actually working really well. But man, for me, it just feels like you're taking him from, you know, a serious role into mid-card comedy.
That's Gargano's role. That's kind of that they've inserted him in. At this point, and there would be more with Gargano because then he'd be the internet darling later on in the show. So Miz goes on and he's going to talk about the truth. So that prompts R-Truth to come down with the punchline. You said you want to tell the truth. Go ahead. And Gargano says the Miz has no balls, and the Miz then challenges R-Truth to a match. And that is up next.
So, of course, R-Truth from North Carolina, you know, representing with a Hornets jersey here. I mean, I thought it was, compared to like the usual 24/7 sort of non sequitur appearances from R-Truth, I thought this one actually had a lot more substance to it. It was the man's hometown. You wanted to tell the truth, so I'm here, dog. Like, that to me, I thought was actually pretty funny. And I suppose, you know, just to give you another match between The Miz against his former tag team partner in The Awesome Truth, if you remember, John.
That Kevin Patrick brought up here. And Corey Graves told us no one remembers that. That's ancient history.
It's kind of true. But they did go up. They main evented against The Rock and John Cena.
Yes. Well, Truth does his Cena spots. Miz then, he's signaling for the skull-crushing finale. But when he does it now, he yells, massive balls.
Mm-hmm.
That's his signal.
You like, I mean, you do most days when you're about to slam down a beer or something.
The next time you and I get into a street fight, Way, that's what I'm going to scream right before I hit my finisher.
Okay. I guarantee you would defuse any situation if somebody did that. Yes.
Could you imagine, like, you're in a heated fight with somebody? If they yelled that, like, I would just start laughing. I'd be like, what are we even fighting over?
I would run away. I'd run away. I wouldn't know what I'm doing.
Massive balls! He's dreaming of an arena one day screaming this back at him. He's going to be waiting. But then he gets distracted by a man in a hoodie in the front row. And of course, this is just too frightening. And he's rolled up by R-Truth in 247. It's not Dexter Lumis. Instead, the man in the hoodie was the guy that we assumed was ringside this whole time. It's Johnny Gargano, who just did a costume change midway through the match.
Yeah, yeah.
So he wasn't watching this either for the 2 minutes it lasted.
Yeah, it's just sort of like Dennis the Menace shit that I it doesn't make me like Johnny Gargano anymore. Like, nobody to me likes Johnny Gargano for that reason. We love him because he's an underdog who never gives up. You know,
dude, the amount of like bell curving that we do for promos on these shows, the amount of times I went back to Jimmy Snuka and Don Morocco throughout this show, and what we have as the contrast of what Stop. Is being set up here, it's like, dude, we give such a pass to some of these problems that are just god awful. It's like, oh, they said a coherent sentence and I made a logical sense of what the beginning and middle of and
it's
end
a
of this
totally
sentence was.
Different show in 2022 compared to 1983. I mean, you can argue, yeah, like that the 1983 set of promos would have worked way better tonight. But, man, they just simply don't produce TV like this. And these people probably didn't necessarily grow up watching promos that were even
well,
like
Miz
that.
Is on all those DVDs. He watched everything.
True, right.
He's the talking head.
Yeah. I don't know. I found Gargano kind of unlikable and obnoxious throughout all this. You know, why not just leave the Miz alone? Say your piece. Let him tell the truth eventually and then be done.
Until this secret is revealed, Miz has been an unabashed victim in this whole thing. He's been the victim of – he has been kidnapped. He has been – his home has been broken into with his infants asleep in their beds.
Totally. He's been dragged underneath the ring. Traumatized.
His friend's been taken away from him. I mean, this is just and now he's being extorted by Johnny Gargano.
Something's up. Well, this secret better be a hell of a secret, okay? The other thing is like the whole Tommaso Ciampa side of it. I did not realize that like when Johnny Gargano was entered into this whole thing via Dexter Lumis, that, you know, this might when he walked out here, I thought this might have been their way of linking Gargano with Ciampa together. And so I felt like they might have kind of teased that a little bit. But I also felt like they just kind of gave it away here, you know, in with Gargano saying, I just texted Ciampa. He texted me back saying that he was okay. So we know that they're actually friends. So to me, like that kind of robbed any tension away. I also don't even necessarily know if they'll be, you know, going towards that direction now because of that line kind of like spelling things out already for us.
It's one thing to have a texting relationship. It's another to have a working relationship in your place of business.
Okay, so there's still more, perhaps.
There's still hurdles to overcome.
Okay.
Kathy Kelly did a sit-down with Candice LeRae, and she knew this would be a challenge, but she's been helped here in the Raw locker room by Belair, Asuka, and Bliss. And then Damage Control interrupt the interview and go over all the women they've put on the shelf, and Candice stands up to them, calling Io untrustworthy. Dakota Kai is still spiteful, and Bayley still isn't Raw Women's Champion. So they just beat the hell out of Candice. The camera tips over, and Candice is destroyed, and her husband had other things he had to get to before taking care of Candice, I guess.
Her husband had to return the cloak that he borrowed from the props department. This was a real oversight, especially after, like... It'd be one thing if we didn't see Gargano for the rest of the night, but we saw him shortly after this, big smile on his face, like happy-go-lucky.
There is a point. The next time we see him backstage, he is stating he's looking for Candice, but then his attention is diverted by Miz and then JBL and Corbin. He then gets into a match with Corbin, and there's no follow-up of like his wife who has been laid out in a locker room somewhere. And this is not one of those like John Moxley, Renee Paquette deals where it's like, we know they're married, but we kind of Candice like flat out is Johnny Gargano's wife. It is stated right there in the sit-down interview. Like, it is – these two are husband and wife in real life and in the story.
Yeah. The moment my wife gets, like, sent to the hospital, like, I'm dropping the rest of my evening. You know, I don't care if JBL is trying to goad me into a match with Baron Corbin. Like, it's over, you know? So I didn't like the fact that they slotted this – like, put this interview towards the end. You know, put it on later and then have Johnny Gargano be done with his evening and then do this Candice stuff. It just kind of makes Johnny look pretty bad to me, in my opinion.
Elias passes by Matt Riddle with the bongos, and he explains he's a serious artist who has a long history of people interrupting him, and he's never going to let it happen again. But he's letting it slide with Riddle, who interrupted him last week. So just bong jokes from Riddle. Alpha Academy show up and call the two Blink 180 Shoosh.
Pretty good. Reunion tour.
Yeah, very expensive reunion tour.
I heard.
People are pretty upset. And they call Ezekiel a moron, and Elias takes issue with this and sets up a tag team match.
Yeah. So I guess we'll talk more about Elias and Riddle afterwards. I mean, they are teasing that Elias wanted to attack Riddle at the end of this, but it was almost more like, oh, I'm going to get you someday. Like, you know, but I secretly, you know, I can't stand you, but I also,
it feels like they're going right back to step one of the Randy Orton team where, this is one we can break up. It's not going to catch on to the same degree.
I mean, but
it
does feel honest,
just a formula with Riddle that we're just regurgitating now. We're doing a poor man's Randy Orton now.
Yeah, just like Randy Orton and Riddle was like a version of Riddle versus and Pete Dunne together.
Exactly. You know,
there's always going to be a bit of an odd couple dynamic. Yeah.
Austin Theory against Mustafa Ali. Seth Rollins was out on commentary. That was his role tonight. And Theory takes a selfie on the apron, gets knocked off by Ali. As Ali mounts a comeback, Rollins is getting more and more worried. And Theory blocks a second tornado DDT, turning it into a fisherman buster. Ali stops the A-Town Down, backstabber, and then Rollins runs in, allowing Theory to crotch Ali on the top rope and turns it into A-Town Down, pinning Ali in 12 minutes and 4 seconds. So this is our third match of the night and third interference slash distraction finish of the night.
Yeah, at this
point. And we're building up Ali for Rollins as he takes this loss to Austin Theory, and no mention at all.
The man everybody beats, Austin Theory.
Yeah, the guy who shows up to close the show at NXT last week. No mention of that at all. He's just back here beating Ali, and Rollins and Ali is the match we're building towards as they fought afterwards, ending with Ali sending Rollins into the LED screen at the entrance.
Yeah, I don't know if that NXT tease was meant to be anything more than, I don't know, just a... another appearance by a Raw person, a WWE main roster person, to try to battle the competition, I suppose.
That 7-minute overrun segment. We got to end it strong. Austin Theory.
I thought tonight just kind of told you everything you needed to know about that. There's, you know, nothing, no real substance there, in my opinion. Yeah, the match was okay, but man, Ali does not feel all that hot this week. Last week, I thought they did a really good job of like making him feel like, you know, he's at least somebody that you know a Seth Rollins you could imagine should take seriously, but this week I didn't feel the same way. Anyway,
Miz is he finds Gargano, so this is where he had been starting his search for Candace, never concluded his finding, and then he runs into JBL and Corbin, who refer to Gargano as the internet hero, the independent darling, and he's in the major leagues now, and tells him to stop and introduce himself. You'd be carrying my bags in the Attitude Era. And Gargano brings up he was 8 years old during the Attitude Era and introduces himself to MC Hammer Pants, JBL, and then goes through all of Corbin's different names, asking him what his name is now, if it's Boring Corbin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Some zingers here. MC Hammer Pants.
At least making note of like the obnoxiously large pants that JBL had last week.
They mentioned that Black Adam is the number one movie in the world, so getting more attention than Guardians of the Galaxy got when Batista went off to do that film. So it's good to see The Rock is in good standing with the company.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, what projects are they involved in with him? Do they like Young Rock?
Young Rock, yes, that would be the one. They're not like producers on Tales from the Territories, but they're providing people to be on that show. So they're being, you know, they're obviously in very good standing. Have you seen the reviews for this thing? On Rotten Tomatoes, the fans love this movie, and critics fucking hate it.
Yeah,
it's such a disparity of reviews.
It's such. I mean, I'm honestly not all that interested in it at all, but like seeing the reactions is making me interested because I've heard even critics say like they thought it was a bad movie, but they can't wait to watch it again. Like it's somehow like bad. Like if you're just kind of talking about maybe, I don't know, scripting, direction, but it was also incredibly fun. And that, to me, sounds like, you know, it's ultimately a good time. So I'm kind of curious. Look, here it is. 90% audience score, 39% critic score. So you can't always trust the critics. You got to go up and make your minds for yourself.
They did like $140 million worldwide over the weekend. So that's a pretty sizable figure. They beat expectations. So, I mean, this is like a real coup for like Dwayne Johnson being the lead here.
DC has so much into this franchise. It's a real coup for Warner Discovery, you know, to have an actual success story on their hands, at least box office wise.
It's great that Warner Brothers finished a film and released it to the public. That's a big step forward from Batgirl. So congratulations, Warner Brothers. Omos destroyed four guys, including Sal Renaro. Didn't get the others, but they were identified as Tom, Denny, and Adam. And MVP cut a promo. Omos just put his hand over this guy's head. I thought Omos was pretty great in the segment. I thought he destroyed these guys. He's got this squash match down pretty pat and just killed these dudes. Ended with a tree slam to Renaro and stacked the two of them in a minute 41. And for all you want to say about this Braun Strowman Omos thing, that clip on the WWE's YouTube did an insane figure, like well over 2 million views. Braun Strowman, he always did well with like his crazy stunts and stuff like that. But these two just doing like their face off and the shove to the floor, that was like a big YouTube hit for WWE. Well ahead of like what Logan Paul is doing for you.
Yeah, which is, I mean, I'd be very curious to know like what the geographical breakdown of that is, because to me, like, well, first of all, like what we hear on the internet and what we hear on like podcasts like these is not obviously reflective of how the rest of the world might think when it comes to what they are looking for in their professional wrestling product. So I was always pretty confident that these two will do really well in Saudi Arabia. And I feel like this is, you know, when you see two giants together, that translates to any market in any language. So I imagine that their match will be received pretty well. And I thought tonight's segment, like if you're going to go ahead and promote a man as a giant, you just kind of do all your classic segments, you know, have him beat four jobbers, next week have him beat five jobbers, and then whatever, just like do what you can to make the most out of what you have with Omos. And
no, I want these two to like crush things next week, like large objects they have to crush and rip a phone book in half.
That'd be fun.
Yeah,
sure.
Is this match going to be the Black Adam of WWE matches? One that critics are going to say is so bad that they can't wait to watch it a second time.
That's a very appropriate comparison. I think there are plenty of Black Adams in wrestling that are even divisive among the critics. But yeah, I can see this being one of those.
Yeah, they're not far off to what Black Adam took in domestically, what they're going to do for that Saudi Arabia show.
Why isn't there a Rotten Tomatoes for pro wrestling?
There is. We pretty much live off of it.
Well, yeah, I guess so. But I mean, one source that can tell you, like, hey, this is what the established journalists feel. This is what the podcast, like Review Rewind a Raw feel, but this is how the audience feels.
It's hard to like tabulate that. I know what you mean. Like that's what I love, that MMA decision site where it just tabulates all the like media member scores and everything like that. But it's I guess unless we were all like rating matches, Grapple's got that.
Yeah, that's the audience score. So is there a thing that tabulates, you know, the critic score?
No one cares about the critic scores, I don't think.
Yeah,
they want to listen to our thoughts, our meanderings. Chad Gable against Elias. Chad Gable's really good. Elias was here.
He's improved, you know, and like I think we saw those improvements while he was Ezekiel. He was trying to work a different style that was a lot more athletic and wrestling heavy. And I feel like he's starting to employ some of those things even as Elias, especially going up against the Chad Gable here.
Elias feels like a lot more limiting of a character to me than even, like, I'm not saying Ezekiel was like this grand reinvention of him, but I just feel like
it was more interesting. Yeah,
it just feels like we're going backwards to Elias, to something that was, you know, I was happy that they were at least of the thought that we've got to move beyond this character, and now it just feels like we're going back to something that was safe and reliable but has such a ceiling to it.
I agree. Like, this is one of those Triple H moves that I'm certainly not in favor of, especially now seeing like the result of Elias, unless they have something bigger for planned for Elias. But 2 weeks in, it seems to mean like they are trying to push him as a real baby face teeting with Matt Riddle as sort of like the next in line of Matt Riddle's, you know, odd pairings. And that to me is just not very interesting for him. Not as interesting, at least, as what Ezekiel was. It's one of those things that was like so weird, and you could tell might have been like a real Vince McMahon idea, but because the people playing it were so good, it really worked. And you just don't have any of that like interest here with this reversion to Elias.
Elias tried to do the shoosh that got no reaction, but then he fires up and, you know, Sting would like scream into the air and the crowd would cheer. So Elias cups his hands. Who wants to walk with Elias? I'm like, why don't you give me your whole mailing address as well on top of it? I mean, could we come up with something longer for you to yell for this audience that is not going to chant this back at you? Terrible. Ankle lock by Gable rotates Elias off the shoulders. The coolest spot of this match was Gable going for a moonsault off the top into a knee strike from Elias. That, man, did Chad Gable have the faith of the world in this man.
Yeah, I can't imagine this feeling very good, John. Like, damn, like, oh my God. This was the spot of the night. You know, all due respect to the main event, which I really enjoyed. But man, this should have at least been the finish for this match. It was really spectacular.
No, we had to instead have a whole spot where Otis misses Elias on the floor, and then Elias hits his finisher on Gable, hitting his finisher in 9.5 minutes. You're totally right. Like, the knee would have been a cool ending, and you would have remembered this. Instead, no one will ever remember this.
Yeah. You know, that was a really cool moment in the match, but overall, this crowd was not responsive to this one at all. And we are critical of perhaps Charlotte as a crowd as a whole, but they're not exactly giving this crowd that much of a reason to cheer for Elias. You know, somebody like who last we saw, to my recollection, was a heel, and I'm speaking of Elias and not Ezekiel. He hasn't been all that interesting. Like, to me, baby faces get over by great wrestling, and while this was good, like, this was not enough, you know.
Maybe he's got to slow down his chant for the crowd.
Could be that too. I don't know.
I have a question. How many of you would be interested in the notion of opting to walk with Elias?
Yeah.
Otis then attacks. It's a 2-on-1 attack. Matt Riddle runs down. Bro to sleep on Gable, floating bro onto both. And yeah, another segment on this show. I'm sorry, this was like just flatlining for me at this point. The OC are in the trainer's room. AJ says, we have a Rhea problem. And Gallo says, well, I'm the best with the women and is going to go handle the Rhea problem. So he comes back after the commercial break holding his balls. A lot of balls on this show, by the way. And they all then agree we have a Rhea problem and they need to do something.
Hmm. Yeah. Right.
I seem to recall that Gallows and Anderson, if it was one thing that was kind of dead on arrival for their last WWE run, it was the angle where they took the New Day's balls. Do you remember that? And put them in formaldehyde? They literally took their balls.
Yeah.
Remember
yes,
this?
Yes. Yes. This sort of scientist segment. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, man. It's Gallows and Anderson. It's you know, like dick jokes.
Dude, they've been back 2 weeks.
Jokes.
They've been back 2 weeks, okay? The new car smell is gone.
Oh, goodness. Like, again, we all get really excited anytime we see new faces, especially when they're faces that are directly from New Japan Pro Wrestling or Impact Wrestling. Forbidden Door, it's happening. What does this mean? Yeah, he's an open weight champion. Isn't this cool, everybody?
Hey, Haku's the hardcore champion, and he's in the Royal Rumble. I'm sure that WWF is going to let him go back to WCW and drop this title on Thunder. I'm sure they will. WCW doesn't have him under contract, but WWF are good guys. They're going to let Haku go back with the hardcore title.
Okay, all that said, like, you know, that new car smell, I mean, I think the challenge of every promoter is to try to maintain that excitement for as long as you can, and WWE has done pretty poor in trying to maintain our excitement for Gallows and Anderson. And granted, like, I think once they realized the raw material they had to work with, I mean, I don't know how much they really could have done. But man, like, this type of fucking, like, ball humor is just, like, the last thing I think they need as baby faces. Again, I could be wrong. Like, balls are a big topic on Raw, and it's clearly working for some people, so maybe it will work. But there's an endearing quality about these two that have clearly, like, you know, given them a big fan base outside of this. For some reason, they have not been able to translate that to Raw in these 2 weeks, at least.
JBL is out to rant about the safe space seekers, these Gen Xers or Gen Zers. Insults the football team here in Carolina. They turn Michael Jordan into a loser. North Carolina is where dreams come to die. He just railed on North Carolina. You would think this would have been the easiest material. And they were just like, is that it? Like, great. Okay, whatever. Because then they were bracing themselves for 14 minutes of Baron Corbin against Johnny Gargano. So of all the things that maybe we have overlooked that maybe are seeping their way into Raw, as AEW is saying goodbye to its rankings, Kevin Patrick notes that Johnny Gargano is 4-1 since joining Raw.
Okay, all right. So what does that mean? What does that rank him?
How far I don't know. Is he he's about to lose. That's what we're about to.
I don't think it matters at all. I think you can win as many as you want. It's like, whatever. Nobody cares.
Gargano's running to the post. JBL's on commentary, so we get him arguing with Kevin Patrick for most of this. Corbin hits deep six, which Kevin Patrick identifies as ring around the rosy. And if you think that JBL and Corey Graves gave him a pass on that one, you would be mistaken. The crowd, and by the crowd, I mean probably 15 people, started chanting Johnny Wrestling. He lands a super kick. I'm looking at my watch. I'm thinking they're going half an hour. This was the longest match. Corbin runs into a super kick. Gargano then ends up standing on the desk, and he takes JBL's hat. He puts on this hat, and I will be kind and state that he was dancing. This also could have been him having like an allergic reaction, the way he was moving around on this desk. This guy is the one individual that grew up and saw Shawn Michaels do his entrance and said, that's a hell of a dancer right there. I wish I could dance like Shawn Michaels.
It might've been his,
cause I've never seen two men with worse rhythm that have not been afraid to share it to the world than Johnny Gargano and Shawn Michaels. So he hits a DDT. He's still wearing the cowboy hat. So what happens? JBL trips Gargano on the apron, leading to end of days, and Corbin wins this match mercifully in 14 minutes and 10 seconds. Four interference or distraction finishes in six matches that we are up to now. But yeah, Don't worry, we got a clean finish with Omos.
Yeah. I think anytime Johnny Gargano is in ring, like, it's, you know, there's a level of quality that you can expect. And I thought this kind of hit that, but it was also against Baron Corbin, who I don't think is a bad wrestler, but man, anytime he's just on screen, it's just kind of, it automatically decreases my interest. And as much as maybe I thought this match technically was perfectly fine, nobody really ever wanted to see Johnny Gargano versus Baron Corbin. It's also a pairing that I don't know where it's leading to, because I don't necessarily feel like Gargano is sticking with Corbin and JBL.
No, he was the quote unquote indie rep for them to be for the JBL Corbin gimmick.
Well, you can't use him as that person while at the same time trying to shove us, you know, a babyface Johnny Gargano we should be cheering for in this feud against The Miz. You know, so The Miz seems to be like his, you know, real actual program. And at the same time, they decided to just use him as like cannon fodder for Baron Corbin and JBL this week. I didn't think it made Gargano look that great, even with the distraction finish, because the distraction came relatively easily. For one thing, like, anybody seeing Johnny Gargano dance like that, I mean, he's really just asking for it. Okay. Like, you really offended everybody by those moves. And when JBL, like, decided to distract, he really just kind of, like, he didn't have to work for it. He just went over to the apron, swiped him once, and Gargano lost the match. Like,
he took a back bump.
off of like, you know, a trip on the apron. And it told me like JBL didn't have to use any sort of like smart tactics. Like it was just JBL imposing his will. And I came out of this match thinking, wow, JBL is the biggest, like he's the toughest guy of this entire room in the room here. Certainly more so than Johnny Gargano.
What about Carl Anderson?
Well, I mean, he wasn't in the room now, was he? But I did not like this for Johnny Gargano. I did not like this entire show for Johnny Gargano. Unfortunately, I do love JBL in this role. I think when he's a full-on heel, he is tremendous. Like when he was being a commentator, when he's doing those panels, I hate him. But when you are employing the man to be the most hateable person, I think he's great. And now he's kind of playing like, you know, in this sort of like
Dan Lambert.
Dan Lambert, like sort of like, you know, like a old curmudgeon Dan Lambert complaining about millennials and Gen Zers. What was the verbiage he used?
Safe space seekers.
Safe space seekers. Exactly. I think he's sort of perfectly cast for that role because it probably reflects who he actually is as a human being. But for that reason, I found him like very entertaining on commentary and as a mouthpiece here.
Yeah. I mean, JBL's a great talker. We'll see if this story has legs with this character, where it ultimately goes. It'll be interesting how they handle him next week because they're in Texas next week, where like that's you can turn the crowd fairly.
He should
easily.
Be healing on the crowd for sure. I mean, just bring up whatever sports embarrassment is currently going on.
Kathy Kelly asks Bianca Belair, "What does tonight's match mean?" And I was genuinely intrigued by what the answer was going to be. She knows she's going to be outnumbered tonight, but this has become bigger than the title, which is perhaps why we're not fighting for the title tonight. It's about payback. Bayley's taken out all of my friends, and I'm not stopping until Bayley is left with nothing. Didn't really explain what tonight was about other than I'm going to fight her.
So, okay. This is the other thing. Do you feel like they were purposely – did they ever explicitly say that the match was not for the championship?
They did like it was never advertised as for the title.
Right.
But if you happen to think it was a title, then tough shit. You watched.
I mean, I certainly went into the match thinking it was that. And I mean, just reading some of the comments on the chat room here, a lot of people coming out of the show didn't necessarily know either. So, I mean, it's fine. It's fair play, you know, when you're promoting a match to not.
Gotcha.
Yeah. But I was just kind of curious if they actually said it outright.
Okay, this was great. Johnny Gargano, in like his 80th segment of the night, meets up with The Miz. The Miz states, "Me and Maurice got a get well card for Kansas."
Did they say that?
I was like, okay, am I just super tired? I've got to rewind that. There's no way he said Kansas. He called her Kansas. Yeah, your wife, Kansas LeRae. This is all I want out of the show is just blunders that make it to airway. Miz says he wants to put all this behind him with Gargano. Gargano tells Miz just to tell the truth. And if you don't next week, I will. Like, this is pure on blackmail. And then he takes the get well card and Miz hasn't even signed it. You prick.
Yeah. And Gargano says you should have put money in it.
Yeah, he said anyway. You're rich.
This reveal better be pretty strong, okay? Because if it's weak, yeah, well, it'd be a shame.
Then there was a video package for Brock Lesnar and Bobby Lashley ahead of Crown Jewel. Neither of them were on the show.
Yeah. Yeah, good video. Got it.
Main event was Bianca Belair taking on Bayley. This was our 23-minute main event to close the show in a rapid fashion. So we saw Belair's arm compromised early on in the match that Bayley was working on. She pulled Bayley by the braid, but then Belair slammed her down. Bayley then smashes the arm onto the floor off the barricade. They go through two commercial breaks. Bayley lifts Belair and tries her own KOD, but Belair lands on her feet, hitting a Bayley to belly on Bayley for a two count. Then Bailey hits a Bailey to belly off the second turnbuckle. That generates a two count. Now Kai and Sky clear the desk. So Belair goes after Kai and Sky and power bombs Bailey onto the desk. The table does not break. So instead, she sends Bailey into the post and then dumps her face first onto the apron. Sky then drives Belair onto the desk. There's a running kick by Kai, and they roll Belair into the ring, and the referee comes out spotting them. This is the first referee to notice any interference all night long, and he goes to eject Dakota and Io when all of a sudden, this random woman delivers a high cross off of the top turnbuckle to the referee, Dakota Kai, and Io Sky. And it turns out to be Nikki Cross. And there's a KOD to Bailey, no referee. Nikki then runs Belair into the post, and Jessica Carr runs into count three. Bailey gets the win. Half the audience thought it was a title change when they realized non-title. And then Nikki attacks Bailey. So she just attacks everybody, and the show goes off the air with Nikki Cross, who has finally snapped. Superhero no longer.
That is correct. Yeah, this seems to be a return to, I don't know, like sort of like a sanity version of Nikki Cross. Very good match. Finish, I think, overbooked, but it's TV, so to me, it's not as upsetting as it would have been if it was on pay-per-view. Served as a big reintroduction for Nikki. I think the bad taste in my mouth would have been lessened, though, if the rest of the show wasn't so completely filled with like distraction finishes and DQ, or at least like, I don't know, interruptions before getting to the end here. In ring, I thought they had a great match, but man, unfortunately, this match struggled in front of the Charlotte crowd, and maybe it was just a crowd that didn't see this as, maybe they got the memo that this wasn't a championship match and they weren't as invested, but maybe it was the length of the show. It could have been a number of reasons, but this whole final ending to me didn't come together as well as I thought maybe it should have.
Yeah, I just felt like this show felt so padded out. And when you're doing an ending like this, like, I get it. You had a story to tell at the end with Nikki. But when you're going 23 minutes, man, that's a long time. And it felt it. They had a nice match, but it was like it was a dead crowd and it was 23 minutes.
I don't think that's bad, though, when it's like, well, you know what? If it's a non-title match, then I can understand. Like I felt like it, for a championship match, I was going to say like that's an appropriate length. At the end of 3 hours, it's going to be tough. Yeah.
So I thought it was a really lackluster episode of Raw. Like this just felt like a lot of stuff just cobbled together, padding out hours, like very little advancement here. Your big thing is Nikki Cross at the end of the show. I thought the Gargano stuff was weak. I thought that the finishes, I can take one or two, but when they're up and down the card, they're just totally taking me out of it. The Corbin match felt like it never ended. It was a long show, and I just thought this was a really, really lackluster, dull edition of Raw.
Yeah,
one of the weakest. I thought it was weaker than last week's, and by that extension, the weakest Raw in months.
Well, you know, like a 1 week bad show, I think would have been, you know, something you could dismiss. This is 2 weeks now, and it's potentially indicative of perhaps a pattern in lack of or a decrease in quality. And I'm trying to understand why that is for me. It's bad booking in the finishes, you know, too many distraction types of things. I also think it's like the amount of talent that suddenly has appeared on Raw. And I think
there were a lot less stars. Like you didn't even have Lashley on this show. Owens is off. You know, no Brock this week.
Yeah.
Ray's now gone. Like it adds up of like the star power that you've also depleted this show of.
Yeah. And like you mentioned, Ray alone is not, you know, a big difference maker, but Ray,
it's the package. And that was becoming like the hottest story on the show. And you've kind of now ended this Dominic Ray thing for the time being.
Exactly. And, you know, Edge is still kind of out of the picture. And so some of the momentum that, you know, has surrounded that entire thing seems to be missing right now. Elias coming back hasn't necessarily, you know, lit everybody on fire. Mustafa Ali, as much as I like him, 2 weeks in, I mean, it feels like you're trying to accomplish too much with him a little too soon, taking him from really, honestly, obscurity, you know, on main event all the way to, you know, how we're supposed to perceive them as like a real challenger for the US championship there. So, and also like, I like Damage Control a lot. I thought tonight's main event was really good, but it has been a feud that's been going on for a long time with a lot of rematches. So, you know, we'll see next week whether or not they could freshen things up. Who's the, okay. Well, let's go to super chats right now first, John, because this person, here, let me just hit this feedback. Okay. Let's go to your super chats right now. And the first one we want to go to is from King of the North, who sends $2. Thank you for the support, King of the North. He says, Luke needs to call Amber Gallows to even the odds. Now, I don't think it'll be Amber Gallows, but who do you think they will be calling to solve their Rhea problem, John?
Well,
what is the solution to their Rhea problem?
I mean, wasn't they kind of had Liv there with the doing the too sweet with AJ and Finn Balor for a week or two, but I guess Liv has now gone off into Crazy Town. So I don't know. You could certainly it's a way to bring somebody up or bring somebody back. That's You did do the angle with Beth, but that really doesn't fit for this kind of a story.
I feel like it would have, because it would have to be somebody with ties to either of any of them, right?
Wendy. AJ's wife.
Claire Lynch. Why stop there? You know? Probably not happening. Yeah, I don't know. This one's a bit of a stumper. Maybe it could be Amber Gallows.
I mean, it's a stumper because it could just be anybody. Like they could just throw anyone into this role. But yeah, we'll see what they have. But I'm assuming like this is like you've announced the six man for Crown Jewel. So either you add the women on each side, or that's a program post Crown Jewel.
And then we got Hanzi, who sends $7 to support. Thank you, as always, for the support, Hanzi. He says, I'm sending a donation for this dialogue being better than Raw. I thought Haku would drop the title on Thunder. I hope Pollock is fully recovered.
Well, yeah, we're still waiting for Haku to drop that hardcore title.
Bullet Club member Haku, maybe he's the solution.
That could be the answer to everyone's questions, yes. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you for the super chats. Let's take a few pieces of feedback here. Her niece writes in from Long Island. This Loomis Miz thing is just getting worse and worse. Thought Extreme Rules was rock bottom. Guess not. Seems like they were trying to tease that Theory can cash in on Seth. Now, I don't think Strowman and Omos will be any good, but their SmackDown video is up to 2.3 million views in 3 days. Nikki Cross straight to the top. And Kevin, I've never seen her this unhinged. Safe to say he wasn't an NXT viewer.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess she wasn't.
There was a weird call by Kevin Patrick where Graves is saying, it's Nikki. And Kevin's yelling, that's not Nikki. That's not Nikki. And Graves is like, yeah, that's Nikki Cross. It's definitely Nikki. It was very odd.
I mean, it might have been his way of like, I don't know, being expressing shock.
He did have a good line after. He said, that's not the Nikki ASA. That's not the Nikki, the superhero that I know was his line after.
Yes. Yeah, I that's probably it. But you know, like we're seeing now, maybe like the returns you can't do so many of. Like we saw Triple H bring back all his toys 2 weeks ago as Gallows and Anderson, and now maybe you're kind of having to rely on bring back like, you know, your Eliases and your Nikki Crosses, people that are currently on the roster but are, you know, getting more of a serious repackage.
It's a trap that people get caught into. AEW got caught into it where it just becomes like this. It's a short term fix that always, you know, can be good for a number 1 week and people get excited and you get into that mode of, wow, who's showing up next? But after a while, you can't maintain that. And you've kind of got to work with the team you have.
Yeah. And some are going to be bigger than others. And, you know, Nikki Cross, unfortunately, I don't think many people were clamoring to see her return. I think, you know, we maybe are supposed to be excited that we're going to get it to see a more serious Nikki Cross. That's not, you know, somebody who thinks she's a superhero, but I don't exactly know if like even serious sanity version Nikki Cross is inspiring so much excitement from people.
Maybe
so,
Dewdrop's in the club.
Okay. I mean, that wouldn't be terrible. Like, I think just simply based on size, you know, getting like, you know, the other largest person in the women's roster to go up.
She was due
Rhea.
For a repackaging. Like, that was clearly what they were doing with her and Nikki. So you've mm-hmm. got to find a spot for her.
Yeah, could make sense. Okay, let's go to Saeed from Vancouver, who says, honestly, Loomis and Miz somehow keeps getting worse and worse. I quite enjoy
and
the
Loomis Elias. Wasn't even on the show, and he's just getting all these all the criticism.
I quite enjoyed the Elias Gable match, but not looking forward to the upcoming tag feud that's going to follow with Riddle. Please keep JBL away from the commentary table. I can't stand him. Is there anybody that comes to mind right away for a female joining the OC? We kind of discussed that. And he says, finally, the cross we know and love is back. Please bring back the rest of sanity. Yeah. I don't know that one's happening so much. Yeah, not. I mean, Eric Young is just recently re-upped with Impact, right?
Yeah, he's doing well there.
He's doing fine. Question, what do you guys look for when choosing promo of the year?
It's usually when we pick it, it's a person, not so much a specific promo. So it's, you know, who's the best consistent talker in the industry.
Yeah, usually for like questions like that, I mean, I don't have to think that hard. Like, it's usually the thing that immediately pops to mind, the things that the promos that like you still remember at the end of the year, you know, or the people cutting those promos you still remember at the end of the year. So I just look for feeling, honestly. I look for like how memorable it is. I look for how it made me feel, how captivating it made me feel.
It's also what stands out to you at the end of the year when you've mm-hmm. seen so much. If there's categories where something jumps at you that happened in March, well, that tells you something that it's remained with you all these months later. So, yeah, there's some of those categories you know instantly when you sit down what's winning. And then there's others that you kind of have to really it can be a more tiresome process to narrow it down.
Mm-hmm.
But that will come at the end of the year. Best of the year, worst of the year. And I think we will have more than enough to talk about on those shows. But we are all out of talking for this show. So thanks to everybody for joining us. We're live Tuesday night for all members at postwrestlingcafe.com, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Join us in the room. You can get your questions in there or submit them at forum.postwrestling.com. We're back on Wednesday night with Rewind to Dynamite live at 8 Eastern. And you can also catch Up Next Tuesday night, 10:15 with Braden and Davey. And then Shot in the Dark on Wednesday with John Cena. But all roads lead to QXT's nightclub Saturday, November the 19th. Tickets available at postwrestling.com/live. It's our 5-year anniversary show. Braden and Davey will be doing the pre-show. Way and I, a live Q&A, and then a VIP meet and greet to follow afterwards with the largest post-gathering ever, with more names to come.
Find out who the toughest man in the room will be.
Oh, that's right. I think my money would be on WH Park.
I mean, I don't think it'd be anybody but Brandon Thurston. Like, he's the only person with real, like, you know, pro wrestling experience amongst. Oh, that's not necessarily true.
I'm now imagining all the different the first time meetings of some of these people, like a. People that have never met each other before. Maybe we'll get some of WH's thoughts on the never open weight championship situation.
I look forward to it. Yes.
All right. That's going to wrap it up. Thanks to everybody for joining us live tonight or downloading the show afterwards. Hey, get in your post memories. You can hear your wonderful voice here. Memo.fm/postwrestling. What's your favorite memory, Way?
Post wrestling memory.
I'll ask you that next month. Okay. That's it. We're out. Thank you for watching Rewind to Raw.